Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
My fellow citizens, we are under attack. The enemy? Bugs. Are your kids complaining about uncomfortable, itchy skin? They probably have body lice. The diseases transmitted by body lice helped bring down Napoleon's army in his 1812 campaign against Russia. The lice lay eggs in the seams of clothing. If Napoleon had made his troops do their laundry, we'd all be speaking French today. It's summer again, time for that pesky summer cold. Or do you have malaria? If you've been bitten by a mosquito, you've already met the insect that's killed more people than all wars combined. Bites from mosquitoes made George Washington so sick that he took huge doses of quinine, which caused him to go deaf during his presidency. We've discovered that mosquitoes are drawn to people who have been drinking beer or exercising. Avoid these things at all costs.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a kolachki's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, and true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Alsip Nursery, offering the best of every season since 1969. He's seriously, strenuously, and severely green, and it gives him a headache every week. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Well, see, I always like giving my advertisers an extra plug in there, you know.
That was a freebie.
Wait a second. Alsip Nursery. Got yourself one there. But that's okay. They're good people. I saw Scott Henderson from Alsip Nursery this week at the Independent Garden Center show at Navy Pier. Boy, I was involved in that for most of the week. We had the tweet up on Monday evening, which was really fun. Went over to the Peterson Garden Project and met a lot of the people that I see come across the Twitter screen here on Sunday mornings were there at the meeting. And then 3 days of the Independent Garden Center show at Navy Pier. And it's interesting. It's a very well-attended show, and it has a lot of energy. It's probably the most important horticultural show in Chicago and maybe in the country right now. And as you know, I'm always promoting independent garden centers, trying to get people, break people of the box store habit, especially when it comes to plants, because we've got to, and I'll just say it again, we have to encourage our independent garden centers, because when they're gone, a lot of the horticultural information will be gone. You're not getting it from the box stores, believe me. You might save a nickel on a plant, and ultimately, you don't know how that plant's been cared for there. You're not going to learn anything about it. You have nobody to ask questions of, and which is why I say go to your independent garden center, like Alsip.
There you go.
Let's give them another one of those.
Freebie number two.
Freebie number two. And Canoopers out in Palatine, where I spoke yesterday for their veggie fair, very first annual veggie fair. And it was a lot of fun. I had a great time. I'll tell you what, if you're listening now and you go to Canoopers today, stop by and say, hey, Mike was talking about it. These are great places, and this is why I support them. On the show today, boy, lots going on. In fact, just, whoa, what did I just throw on the ground? Okay. As long as it's not my coffee, we're fine. Everything else is fair game. The coffee, no. Of course, if I dump my coffee on the floor, Denny, you're out of the booth there and into the kitchen to get me more. That's the way this works.
Okay.
Just say it.
Yeah, I know my role. That's fine.
That's good. I'm glad you know your role. You do other things. Dennis answers the phones, and sometimes he answers them in one room, and sometimes he answers them in the other because, sometimes the lines don't work the way they're supposed to work. And, that's so unusual here. And the other thing is, speaking of large corporate giants that don't come through for you, I'm watching Dig in Chicago on Comcast. You know, we've been broadcasting on Comcast all season. Episode 10, I got ready for that. Except it was episode 9.
Oh, I see.
So Comcast screwed up, and I was not real happy about that. So for those of you who were waiting for episode 10, you're not the only ones who were surprised.
Let's call them right now. Comcast, let's call them. Let's talk.
Let's not.
Okay.
All right. Let's not do that. We'll save it. I'm going to let the dig in people take care of that.
Okay. All right.
So for those of you who were watching Dig In yesterday, and you're just a little confused because you said I've seen this before. I've seen it a couple of times. Yeah, me too. And I assume that next week they'll come up with episode 10. In the meantime. Do I have Newsbed? Yes, I do. All right. Here we go. This just in. In the WCPT newsroom, which is basically where I'm sitting right now, the WCPT news desk, I got an email this morning from the governor's office. Pat Quinn said, hey, how you doing, Mike? Good morning, hope you got your coffee. Actually, he didn't, but I got this notice. Governor Pat Quinn, and it's dated yesterday. No, wait, what's today? Today's the 26th. No, it's today. It's this morning. Governor Pat Quinn today vetoed a bill which would have removed the right of home rule communities to implement innovative solutions to the plastic bag litter problem. In the veto message, the governor said the bill is more restrictive on municipalities than any other plastic bag regulation in the country, which would have created a roadblock for locals to choose policies that fit the needs of the area. So I was talking about this the other week. Remember, I don't know if you remember, but I mentioned the hat trick because he signed the legislation banning landfills in Cook County. Then he vetoed the Leucadia power plant on the southeast side of Chicago. And then I said, come on, Gov. Let's get the plastic, veto this really bad plastic bag bill. And he did, which is so exciting. So congratulations, Governor Quinn, for doing the right thing. I know Governor Quinn has taken some heat on this radio station. He's taken heat in the newspapers, because he brought the legislators back into session and they didn't get things accomplished that they wanted to accomplish. And, I know he gets played by Michael Madigan and by other politicians, and they say he's weak and he's ineffective. He doesn't know what he's doing. And yet, the environmental laws have done very well under Governor Pat Quinn. So if you're just a one-issue voter, that works both ways. If pension is the only thing on your mind, you're disappointed. If the environment's the only thing on your mind, you're pretty happy today. And if you're a smart voter and you pay attention to all of the above and then weigh it and then vote, it's always a mixed bag, and that's the way it works. So congratulations to the governor. So what I did, and part of this came about because of the efforts of 13-year-old Abby Goldberg. Remember, we talked about her. She did a petition to get the bill vetoed, and got 175,000 signatures.
Wow.
That's almost as many followers as I have on Facebook. And that was part of it. And then a lot of organizations like Sierra Club Illinois, Environment Illinois, Illinois Recycling Association, my organization, the Chicago Recycling Coalition, Prairie River Network, et cetera, were against the bill. And I'm very happy to say that the governor stepped up and did the right thing. So what I did is I got on the horn and I called Max Muller from Environment Illinois, and he's going to be on later in the show to discuss this, because he's going up to Grays Lake today to do a news conference with, I guess, Abby Goldberg, 13-year-old Abby Goldberg up there, and talk about how this came through. And interesting, Jennifer Walling, executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council, says, with this veto, Governor Quinn has completed the 2012 legislative session with a perfect record for the environment. Hey, you folks in Wisconsin. Hey, you folks in Indiana. We got a governor that cares about the environment. To me, that's important. That's an important thing. So just saying. All right. So we'll talk about that later in the first hour. I have Meredith Sawinski. Is that right? Okay, I got it close enough. In fact, I'm going to even, why don't you pull that that microphone over. And we were talking about this out in the green room. You know, your husband's a Paisan. You're a Paisan by marriage.
Right.
With me.
Right.
Sawinski. The Shavinsky is probably how it's pronounced in Poland.
Which sounds official to me.
I think it sounds official, but we'll go with Sawinski. She's going to talk in a second about the Chicago Wilderness Corporate Council Day of Service. I know it sounds like a mouthful. Basically, it is tied in to National Public Lands Day, which is Saturday, September 29th. And we're doing this early so you can get on board. And you can sign up and you can register and you can volunteer and go out to some of our public lands and do some good and help the environment. Governor Quinn did his part today. Now you do your part. Get out there. I think that's a good way to start that.
Absolutely.
Rick DeMaio weather at 9:45. I got two things I got to talk to Rick DeMaio about. First, last week he said he didn't see any 90s in the future. Do you remember that, Denny?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah. So we had three this week, I believe.
It's a roll of the dice, that weather.
And you know what? And he's still the best weather guy in town. But I'm just going to ask him, well, so what happened? You know, what changed that made that happen? Why didn't you see that coming? But the thing he does see coming is a hurricane, Hurricane Isaac, which, you know, there's a couple of ways you could look at that. You could say the Republicans are about to weather the storm. That would be a headline from the right-wing press. And the left-wing press would be, gosh, Republicans can't do anything right this year. So, you know, it depends on how you look at it. But we'll talk to Rick DeMaio about the hurricane about to hit Florida. And then I guess another one on the horizon. So hurricane season. And it's usually about this time. About the beginning of September, that you start to see this. And then the reason we played that little clip at the top of the show, Amy Stewart, one of my favorite authors, and she's one of my favorite authors because she actually agrees to come on the show. You know, if you do that, I'm so easy. I'm easy. What? Are you going to be on the show? You're my best friend. Oh, thank you. Meredith's my best friend today.
I know. I'm so excited to learn this. Thank you.
Exactly. but Amy Stewart, the author of Wicked Plants, Wicked Bugs, The Earth Moved, Flower Confidential, a bunch. I call her the best horticultural writer in the biz today. And I think she is in America right now. That's a debatable point, but I think she is. And she will be on the show because she's going to be at Fernwood Botanical Garden and Nature Preserve. And, well, we'll talk about what she's going to do, but it has to do with her books and the evil things, that, especially plants, what bad things plants can do to you. Because there's a lot of poisonous plants out there. There's a lot of scratchy, itchy plants. There's plants that cause trouble. And that's why she wrote The Plant. the book called Wicked Plants, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities.
Oh, my.
We're going to be giving away a copy of that, as well as a copy of Wicked Bugs, The Louse That Conquered Napoleon's Army and Other Diabolical Insects. And so giveaway, we got three books to give away and a pair of tickets to Fernwood Botanical Garden. So if you're going to take those, because it's in Niles, Michigan, you know, make sure you're going to actually be able to show up for that. I want to give away tickets to people who really want to go out to Fernwood and do that. So all of that on today's show, Meredith Shavinsky.
Thank you for using the proper pronunciation.
I have no idea. It might be and it might not be. I wish Mom were around now. Mom would tell me. She would say, that's not how you pronounce that. I'll have some of my Polish friends call and they'll tell me, give me a pronunciation. But I think that's how it would be. Sawinski, Meredith Sawinski. And Meredith is, you're with the Chicago Wilderness Corporate Council.
Yes.
All right. Now, I don't want to say that's off-putting, but it's like, you know, it's a lot. And it makes me, you know, people might think, well, when, you know, do I have to wear a suit and tie when I go out and volunteer at these natural areas?
It's a little counterintuitive with the corporate council on the back end, for sure.
Yeah, well, so what is the corporate council? I mean, we know about Chicago Wilderness. It's a coalition involving several state area right here in the confluence of southern Lake Michigan, of various ecosystems. Mm-hmm. And what's the corporate council all about?
So the corporate council is a member of Chicago Wilderness. As you know, Chicago Wilderness is about 260 companies that come together. And Chicago Wilderness is a member. Chicago Wilderness Corporate Council is a member of Chicago Wilderness. And we are about 36 companies strong with our mission to support Chicago Wilderness, the coalition.
Okay. And how do you do that? Obviously, I assume you raise money.
Yeah. So we financial contributions is a big part of it. We promote sustainable practices within different corporate companies. So, for example, we've got ComEd, who is a founding member, Nicor Gas, Burns & McDonald. There's a lot of consulting and larger companies, gas utilities, electric utilities that you've heard about. And everybody exchanges ideas on sustainable practices and networks to establish sort of baseline of best corporate practices.
Okay. And you're also behind this effort, which is all about National Public Lands Day, which is it's the nation's largest single day volunteer for public lands, volunteer day. It's Saturday, September 9th, 29th, rather, 2012. And it's interesting. It only started in 1994. Three sites and 700 volunteers. Last year, there were 170,000 volunteers working at over 2,000 sites in every state, the District of Columbia, and many of the U.S. territories. Now, obviously, in the Chicago area, we have a lot to offer. What is it that the Corporate Council is doing to get volunteers in?
So building on the National Public Lands Day, we engage 19 different sites. This year, it's 19 different sites. Also in the Southeast Wisconsin and in Indiana as well, where corporate members and non-corporate members, families, brownies, cubs, Girl Scouts, anybody who can go out there to go and do their part at restoring or maintaining the local, you know, the health of the local wilderness.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, one thing, because I just saw a tweet from Ron Wolford at Illinois Extension, and I put this on my website for this week. If you go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show, more environmental good news in Illinois, and that's Hackmatack.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Chicago Wilderness has been behind. There was an announcement made on August 15th. Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar announced that the Hakpatak National Wildlife Refuge will be created in northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin. It's going to encompass a lot of area up there. And it's amazing that it's the first national wildlife refuge in this area, which is stunning when you think about the importance of, as I said, ecosystems in this area. So you guys must be pretty happy about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think you bring up something that kind of touches on me personally and my involvement with Day of Service. I mean, this is our fourth year, Chicago Wilderness Corporate Council's fourth year of having this Day of Service. Again, all in support of Chicago Wilderness, the Alliance. And, you know, you work in the environment of, you know, dealing with gardening and restoring local health and the environmental world every day. And a lot of our corporate council members, it's not their everyday jobs. And being a part of corporate council and especially the Day of Service allows us to sort of relearn what it is to get out there and enjoy the environment, remember how hard people work for restoring it and making it a greener, better place for all of us. So, the Hakpatak program is very exciting. I mean, there are a lot of people who have worked very hard.
I know. Again, a lot of those organizations that I mentioned before that were behind the governor vetoing the plastic bag bill are the same organizations that have been promoting Hakpatak, mm-hmm. National Wildlife Refuge, and Sierra Club, Illinois, and Open Lands, and Chicago Wilderness, and excuse me, and others. Now, and by the way, if you got a favorite site that you want to get people to volunteer for, and you need to, what's the deadline? I had that up here a second ago. I think it is, let's see.
You know what? I apologize.
September 19th.
Yes, September 19th.
Okay. Unless otherwise noted, all activities are 9 a.m. to 12 noon. So, you know, it's 3 hours of your life to help, you know, and some might go longer. But you can go to my website and you can see the list, and it includes Cook County, DuPage County, Kane County, Lake County, McHenry County, Will County, Indiana, Wisconsin, all kinds of sites. Where are you going to be?
You know, it's where I was last year as well, the Bill Jarvis Bird Sanctuary just at Irving Park and the lake. Mm-hmm. I think it's a perfect example of when you get out to a site and you realize how hard people work on a regular basis to maintain the wilderness that you know, let birds migrate through Chicago and keep sort of the green space and the interconnected green areas so that wildlife can travel through Chicago. And
it's for people who don't know, that's a pretty amazing little site there.
It is.
That
it really is.
One of the things you forget when you go to Montrose, you know, you take Montrose across to the lake, there's a lot of ground east of Montrose.
Mm-hmm.
And there's parks. And there's a little restaurant there, and people play volleyball on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's a bird sanctuary, too.
Yep, absolutely. And I think, I don't remember the exact acreage. I know it's a few acreage, you know, that's fenced and dedicated and, you know, to migratory birds. And when I was working there last year, sort of touching on the show Portlandia, I felt like I was putting a bird on it until I go out there and I see what people are really doing, who are really involved with, you know, restoring these areas for our local wildlife. So,
wait, you know, felt like you were in it?
I felt like, you know, there's the saying, like, put a bird on it. Everybody wants to put a bird on it. And look, I'm a nature person if I do this kind of thing. that's not what it, you know, that's not what it means. That's not
Denny's
what it
nodding.
Is.
He knows all about it. See, I haven't watched Portlandia, so I missed the cultural reference. Is this like a new catchphrase?
Yeah. It's just basically, yeah.
Put a bird on it.
Put a bird on it.
Put a bird on it.
You know, there's other ways you could interpret that. Hey, pal, put a bird on it, all right?
Yeah. But, you know, until you go out there and you do it. And I think, you know, when I volunteered I was the site leader at Bill Jarvis Bird Sanctuary last year. What that inspired me to do is my daughter takes gymnastics at Peterson Park Gymnastics Center. And while I was there, right outside of the Forest Preserve, which is just, you know, one of the greatest sanctuaries in Chicago. But right outside of the Forest Preserve, there's an area where my younger daughter and I hang out. And sort of going back to how easy it was on the day of service, honestly, thinking 3 hours and the amount of impact that was made in 3 hours between picking up garbage around the bird sanctuary and actually going in and planting some of the native plants and some of the wetland plants. I signed my 4-year-old up to pick up garbage with me outside of the Peterson Park Gymnastics Center, right in that little forest reserve there. It's like sort of once you get a taste for how easy it is to help or clean up the environment.
Just do your part.
To do your part, absolutely.
Because you realize that. One, people are constantly throwing trash around,
yes.
which I don't get. I've never understood that, that folks would have such disregard for their own nest.
Yep.
Fouling your own nest. What is that all about? Now, you could say that on a global scale, too, that, you know, when we pump carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, we're fouling our own nest. But on a local level, have you ever wanted, when you're driving in your car, have you ever, you know, somebody drops a piece of paper out the window? I've often, you know, if it's on a traffic light, I want to put the car in park, get out of the car and walk. Excuse me, you dropped this. Can I help you put this back? Except yeah, I'm always afraid the guy will have a gun.
Oh, you know, absolutely. But it's appalling, though.
But it is. And bottles and whatever else. And what causes that lack of respect, that lack of caring for our own environment? I don't know. But so when you have a 4-year-old, you get a chance to teach. You said she's 4.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
She's going to put a bird on it for the rest of her life, baby.
Hopefully.
Well, yeah, I know. Well, yeah, unless she rebels against mom.
Right.
But I don't think that's the kind of thing you rebel against, because you can see the good that that's doing. And if it were me, I would grow up thinking, why is there so much garbage? Does she ever ask that question?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, at first I think my husband and, you know, a few other people thought I was a little crazy for getting out there and starting to pick up garbage in some area that we just hang out in for 45 minutes while my daughter takes gymnastics. And the best thing at the end was to stand back with my 4-year-old and be like, do you see any garbage here? And we've got, you know, we ran out of, you know, garbage bags to put stuff in. And it's like, no, it looked great. I mean, the sense of accomplishment and knowing that the deer that tramped through there and all the birds and everything else, you know, for just a short period of time, their home is going to be a little bit cleaner. But it is that easy.
I guess that's the point. You get
in a movie theater, pick up after yourself. You know, like let's, you know, not be lazy about what we're doing, and let's take responsibility and teach our kids and everybody else that it's not hard.
It's not.
To do
and as we say, we're asking for 3 hours of your time on the 29th. Of September. It's a Saturday morning. It's probably going to be a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. You know, September is the best month in Chicago, bar none. I think September has always been the best time of the year in Chicago. That is Meredith Sawinski. She's with the Chicago Wilderness Corporate Council Day of Service. Hang on just a second, Meredith. Let me do this, and then we will get back to you again. Like I say, if you got a favorite place that you want to plug, 773-763-9278 is our telephone number. Now, I think I read someplace that August is the cruelest month. I might be mistaken about that. But regardless of my literary ignorance, we're about to lurch into September, which means that you need a copy of the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, which I have right here in my lukewarm little hands. I'm actually holding it up. Am I holding this up, Meredith?
Absolutely.
Dennis, do I have it in my hands?
I see it. Wait, yeah, Chicagoland Gardening.
All right, cool. There's a story about how to care for your vegetable garden as we wind down the growing season. And this is the time of year when we begin thinking about our indoor plants, which sustain us during the cold or not so cold Chicago winters. The phrase ficus plant is often used as a punchline, but there are a number of them out there. Think 850 ficus species worldwide. Of course, you probably have a reliable species like rubber plant or fiddly fig. Wouldn't you like to know how to keep them healthy until next spring? Sure you would. Trust me. Then there's my column on the Inside Back Page. I have been called a ficus plant on occasion, which may or may not be a reason to read my column. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees and the Morton Arboretum. This fall, you might see the needles dropping from your evergreens. Don't panic. It might be something as simple as fall needle drop, also known as normal needle drop. In autumn, many evergreens will drop older needles. On some evergreens, such as white pine or arborvitae, this process can be very dramatic, making the evergreen look like it's dying. To determine if your tree has a disease or is going through normal needle drop, check the location of the browning. Trees going through normal needle drop will have a fairly uniform brown appearance in the interior of the tree, since that is where the oldest needles are located. After a few weeks, the brown needles will fall off, leaving the tree looking normal and healthy. Trees with a disease may have brown needles in various areas of the tree, depending on the disease, but the appearance will not be as uniform as that of needle drop. Now, if you're not sure, well, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your evergreens. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Oh, it would help if the CD... Wait a second. Now, see. Let's see. Operator error. The wrong CD button has been pushed here. So we're just going to put this in here. You folks, you know, engage in quiet conversation while...
All right.
I am loading up.
Portlandia.
Portlandia. There
That's
we
good
go.
Stuff.
It's funny you should mention it. Thank you. we're playing this in honor of the event on the 29th, hoping there will be no rain. It's funny, you should say that. I just got a tweet from Zan, who says, you have got to watch Portlandia. It's on Netflix. I canceled my Netflix account because I was never using it. You see? Meredith, you seem appalled that I would cancel Netflix.
There's so much good stuff on it. And Portlandia is all of about, 20, 25 minutes when you're watching it. There's plenty of things that people tell me to do in my life that I get that don't have time for, but you got to make time for Portlandia or Netflix.
And Angle Archer tweeted, you're singing my tune, littering drives me crazy. What would it take to get a deposit on plastic bottles and cans in Illinois? You know, that is a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
We need a bottle bill in Illinois, and the states, it's been proven. You look at statistics, and the states that have bottle bills have much less in the way, well, their recycling rates go up tremendously, and the bottles in the landfills go down tremendously, and it's the beverage container manufacturers. They just don't want that because they make money when people throw stuff away. And it's crazy for us not to have a bottle bill in Illinois. It's been discussed many times in the past, never gone anywhere, because the lobbyists are all over, the state assembly, and it's about money and politicians being bought off. That's what it's all about. Now we have a governor who actually cares about the environment. Maybe it's time to do something like that. I don't know. Before I let you go this morning, Meredith Sawinski, where can people, where are some of the places they can go and help out on the 29th of September?
On the 29th of September, we've got 19 sites, as you'd mentioned before. They spread from the southeast Wisconsin through Chicago and the suburbs and then northern Indiana. So, just to kind of give you an idea of how they're distributed. There's about 4 sites in Chicago, and in Cook County, there's about 3 additional. We've got one in Palos Hills, one in Riverdale, one in Westchester. In DuPage County, we have 5 sites, a few in West Chicago, one in Wheaton, one in Naperville, one in Kane County and St. Charles. In Lake County, we have 2 sites, one in Lake Barrington, one in River Roads. We also have Woodstock in McHenry County. And then in Indiana, it's in Michigan City, and Wisconsin is in Belleville, Wisconsin. The thing I want to mention is, 90% of these sites allow kids to go out and participate as long as there's an adult present. You can't mm-hmm. just drop off your kid and tell them to pick up trash and pick them up 3 hours later. It's not the way it works.
And give them a smartphone and say, entertain yourself for
exactly.
3 hours.
Here, right? Look up some stuff on recycling on your phone for 3 hours.
Figure out how to get a bottle bill in Illinois. I expect an answer in 3 hours when I come and pick you up.
There
okay?
you go. But in particular, the Medeo Wynn National Tallgrass Prairie in Will County, they actually do youth activities like formalized youth programs. So while the parents are doing the grunt work, if you will, the kids are learning in a more childlike format about conserving nature and restoring nature and all those.
I'm
good
childlike.
Things.
Can I
Perfect.
Attend?
I don't. I'm not sure if it'll work for you. You got to be a little shorter.
I can crawl around on my knees if you want. All right, it'll skin them up a little bit. But other than that.
The other thing I want to point out about Day of Service, and I say this again because I'm thinking about myself and what would intimidate me about doing something like Day of Service or getting involved with National Public Lands Day. You don't have to know everything there is about restoring, the local environmental health, and you don't need to know what native plants go here and what's not invasive versus non-invasive. honestly, I really don't know any of that. I go to these sites. There are
what
these,
is wrong with you?
I know. It's not in my, I but do, you know, you're, but I'm no, learning.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think people are intimidated by that, that they are supposed, they think they're supposed to know which plant to rip
yeah,
up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess my, you know, what I want to make sure people understand is there's really great, great guidance out there. There are people that, you know, the site owners, whether it is the, you know, Cook County Forest Preserve District or whether it's DuPage County Forest Preserve, There are people out there to guide you to say, pick this, leave this there, plant this here. And what you end up doing is learning. Mm-hmm. So you actually end up learning what's invasive or not invasive. And you learn all these great tips for taking back to your garden and to your house.
And that's a wonderful thing because you're not going to become a naturalist overnight with a degree just by showing up for 3 hours. But you might learn, let's say you learn two plants that are invasive.
Yep.
You will know those plants now. You will recognize those mm-hmm. plants. And then you learn two more the next time you come. And then you learn two more the next time.
And you'll never see your walking path the same. I mean, when you yeah. start learning those pieces and you're walking through another forest preserve somewhere else in some other county, you're going to say, I know this plant. I remember that day. And that's kind of what you take from the day of service. So it's yeah. great, those 3 hours. But it's making sure you hold on to that, you keep learning, and if you can take it to other places, it's great.
Well, thank you so much, Meredith Sawinski, for coming down here and letting us know about the activities, the Chicago Wilderness Corporate Council Day of Service. And again, don't let that fool you. It's really National Public Lands Day. It's just our local version mm-hmm. of that. And it's a way for you to give back to nature, which gives to us every single day. And we need to help nature a little bit. And I think this is a good thing, as you've already done, to teach your kids. So thanks again, and good luck. And if you want to sign up, go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. I've got all the links. Or if you just want to go to Chicago Wilderness, you can do that and find information at www.chicagowilderness.org. D. Landreth Seed Company is once again offering their fabulous heirloom seeds and classic plants on the Mike Novak Show. Here's one you won't want to miss, the wild saffron crocus bulb. We talked about this last week. Saffron is considered the most expensive spice on the planet. The spice also has a very mild, pleasant flavor, but it is mostly coveted for its coloring ability. Bet you didn't know that. You are not going to get a lot of saffron from a package of bulbs. It takes, ready for this, 35,000 bulbs to produce a pound of saffron. It would take 1,100 bulbs to produce a half ounce of saffron, the amount one cook would probably use in a year if they cooked with saffron frequently. Make sure you get, by the way, the wild saffron bulb when you go to D. Landreth Seeds. This is the one that will grow in our Zone 5 gardens. It is the only saffron that will grow in the colder climates of the U.S., and it has a striking blue color. But you need to order soon, you know, because you want to get them in the ground right now. If you put them in the ground now, right at the end of August, beginning of September, they will come up in September. It's really pretty cool. Landreth has a limited supply of these bulbs, and you shouldn't miss this opportunity. Log on to LandrethSeeds.com, find them on Facebook, or call 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyors of fine seeds since 1784, and tell them Mike sent you.
Summer has arrived, and for many gardeners, that means heat, drought, and watering bans. Help your landscapes thrive despite these seasonal challenges with proper care and Milorganite fertilizer. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. Mulch the soil with a layer of organic material to conserve moisture, reduce weeds, and improve the soils it breaks down. Water plants thoroughly and less frequently whenever you irrigate the garden. This encourages deep roots, making your plants more drought tolerant and pest resistant. Water early in the day to reduce water loss to evaporation. And be sure to use Milorganite for all your summer fertilization needs. The organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn plants even during drought. Milorganite remains in the soil until the conditions are right for plant growth. including your lawn, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% non-staining iron promotes deep green growth. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. That's Milorganite.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Time for a little weather from meteorologist Rick DeMaio. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Rick. What's up with the heartbreaker stuff?
You're going to break somebody's heart with a forecast today. Or maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a bunch of different ways you can look at it. I guess you can look short term and say, I was hoping for some nice weather today. And even though I think the best of our weather is over with, because there's some rain moving in.
I was going to play Mr. Blue Sky, and then I realized, no, we're supposed to get some rain today, aren't we?
Yeah, and you know what? We have had, you know, some nice, you know, we have had a nice start to the day. You know, the sun's coming up to the east. The clouds are over us, thickening up and moving very quickly from west to east. And it's raining in parts of the southwest suburbs and up across northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin, and that rain extends pretty much all the way back into Missouri, and that's going to be with us today, and then we get a nice break. And then the real question is how much rain we're going to end up getting out of, check this out, Mike, the remnants of what will end up probably being a Category 2 Hurricane Isaac.
Wow, some of that's going to come up our way, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, it all depends on how this hurricane kind of ends up getting caught up in the flow. And forecast, you know, I think 4 or 5 days out for hurricanes that begin to kind of slow down and wobble are extremely challenging. But what we do think is that the current signs are showing that the storm will most likely move into the eastern sections of the Gulf of Mexico, where water temperatures are about 4 to 5 degrees warmer than they are in the southern Caribbean. So the storm is still a tropical storm. It's got a really large, what we call, volume to it, a large storm shield, but it doesn't really have anything underneath it to really get it cranking. However, that's going to change once it begins to move away from the southwest tip of Florida, away from Tampa, even though they'll probably have maybe 30, 40-mile-per-hour winds in Tampa tomorrow, obviously where the Republican National Convention is. And it looks like it may have some effect on flights coming in and out of that city. You know, obviously a lot of people still getting down there, but I would think most of your heavy hitters are probably down there by later on today. Mm-hmm. But then the question is what happens when it moves in the northern Gulf? And there's a couple of different, you know, solutions, one being Mobile, or one being, I should say, Pensacola, and then Mobile, and then, believe it or not, New Orleans by the time we get into Tuesday. And then, Mike, the interesting thing about it is the storm pretty much goes from the west coast of, or the western tip of the Florida Peninsula over to the United States and doesn't really move that fast. With half the storm sucking that moisture up the Gulf of Mexico and the other half over the inland areas, this brings back memories of what we had, you know, 25 years ago with a weak tropical storm Bonnie and Allison, which didn't really move much, but they produced over 30 inches of rain. So this could be a huge, huge flood maker for the Gulf Coast. And then there's some numerical models that take it right up into central Illinois by this time next week. So it'll be a very interesting storm to watch. You're going to hear the word Isaac about 150,000 times.
Oh, my goodness.
Saturday, yeah.
All right. First of all, don't move.
Yeah, I'm not.
Wherever you are, because your cell was breaking up a little bit there, and we missed a little bit about a little bit of that. And the idea you said from western Florida to where it's going to be affecting?
To about the Houston area.
So and is that because it's going to be spinning out there, or is just that the shield is so large, or what?
That's a great question. One, the shield is large, and two, it's spinning, but three, the fact that the upper-level winds are going to take the storm basically nowhere. So what happens is you have two different scenarios when you get these hurricanes move up into the northern Gulf. The first one is that the beginning to get into the upper-level wind flow of what we call the mid-latitude westerly. That's basically the type of jet stream that dominates our weather here in Chicago. For instance, the jet stream over, say, is about 30 to 40 miles per hour. Hurricanes don't like when they get wind at 30 to 40 miles per hour coming over the top. The wind projected to be over the top of what will be Hurricane Isaac by the time we get to this time on Monday is basically less than 10 miles per hour, and it doesn't really move anywhere for 3 days. So that's why the storm is going to become a real, real big problem from the standpoint of A, heavy rainfall, B, winds maybe 50, 60, 70 miles per hour. But what I'm really concerned about now is that area where the hurricane is going to be moving is the densest area from a standpoint of offshore drilling platforms anywhere in the Gulf of Mexico, in between the west or that western tip of the Florida Peninsula over to the eastern section of Texas. So I know we've had oil prices and gas prices jump over the last month. Mike, I would not be surprised if they probably jump another 25 to 30 cents between now and next week, just due to the fact they're going to be shutting down some of these rigs if they haven't shut them down already.
Yikes. Now, we don't need that. We don't need that. And you know, some of it is taking advantage of the situation. It's
Without a doubt.
But wow. Now, you know, by the way, your secret admirer just texted me. And that's not so secret. Jennifer Brennan, who loves your forecast, she just thinks you're the best. She always listens on Sunday on her way to a chalet. But she's interested in the rain that might be coming to Illinois. I mean, you're saying it's possible that this thing could affect Illinois. And if so, I would assume that that's going to mitigate some of the drought if it can, you know, park here.
You know what? And that's a great question, because that's really going to help us out as we head into not only the harvest season, but also the beginning of what I call the period where you start to get some of these more, you know, more persistent rain events. And I was up in parts of McHenry County yesterday and got off the side of the road and looked at a couple of these farm fields. And, you know, northern Lake County and northern McHenry County were basically the epicenter of the drought here across, you know, the Chicagoland area. You look outside the window here, downtown Chicago, where you are right now in the studio, and you go, what drought? The grass looks green, the trees look nice, blah, blah, blah. But you get into some of these areas where they've had basically no rain at one point during the summertime for almost a month, and Mike, the corn is maybe 4 or 5 inches long. It looks terrible. But from a standpoint of what would happen with Isaac, if an Isaac does, you know, kind of roll up into southern Missouri and southern Illinois, depending on the speed of these systems, if it moves fast, maybe you can get a couple of inches of rain out of it because it's basically dragging the rain with it. But if these things tend to move slow, you can easily get 6 to 8 inches of rain out of something like this. So while we don't want, you know, catastrophic flooding, I think that the remnants of Isaac, whether it moves through it slow or moves through it fast, I think is going to be a real, real huge beneficial rain producer by the time we get to Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of next week. Now, that's dependent on the track of it, but usually when we get these hurricanes kind of break apart and move northward, they're usually pretty good rain producers, and I think that's going to be the case this time next week. Still a lot of questions to ask, a lot of questions to answer, but I think it's kind of pointing towards that direction.
And is there another one following behind it? You know, we got a 1-2 punch happening here?
You know what? There is a storm that was called Jordan, and it kind of weakened and kind of came apart and weakened and kind of, you know, came back together. The pattern, though, is such that anything that does develop in the southern area of the Atlantic looks like it's going to be moving towards the west. So I think we do have at least some potential for obviously another maybe 1 or 2 storms, and obviously we don't want any hurricanes. But this is the kind of pattern that if you get a couple of these things coming through and adding a little bit of moisture to the atmosphere, I think the outlook for precipitation over the next month looks pretty good. And in fact, the Climate Prediction Center has actually kind of agreed that maybe we could be over the next, you know, 8 to 14 days getting a little bit more rainfall coming in from the Gulf of Mexico and from the southeast United States. due to the remnants of some tropical systems. And I think that's probably going to be the case.
You know, it's interesting that often this is the way droughts get broken, isn't it, with these kinds of storms, and they come in and they dump rain.
You know, it is interesting. And I had some students ask me on Friday, they said, when do we know we're in a drought? I go, usually about halfway through. You go, I think we're in a drought by now. You don't really predict when you're going to come in. They're sometimes easy to predict when you're going to come out of it. But obviously, when you start to get some influx of tropical moisture and the remnants of any sort of tropical storms northward, that usually is the beginning of the end of the drought. And hopefully we can keep that going for a while.
All right. And before I let you go, because we got about a minute and a half here, you last week said that you didn't see any 90s in the forecast, and we got about three this week. So what happened? I mean, you must have gotten faked out by something.
Yeah, you know what? I think I did and everybody else did, because some of this heat that came out of Missouri and Illinois, it just seemed to be about 3 to 4 degrees warmer than any of the numerical models were actually predicting. Everything was saying 87, 88, 89. And I think what we began to realize is that once we got this hot weather over this basically still rather dry ground coming in from Missouri and West Illinois, I think we kind of got faked out a little bit. And we ended up with 3 days above 90. I think we're up to 43 now. And even though we'll get some rain today, we may be back into the low to mid-80s as quickly as tomorrow and maybe Tuesday and Wednesday. So I don't see any heat coming back at us, so I got to keep away from any 90s. I don't think we're going to see that. But definitely once we get past the rain today, Mike, next 4 to 5 days look great before we get the remnants of Isaac come here by next Friday and Saturday.
And you don't see that heat building up again?
No. Nothing in the way of an extreme heat. It's really difficult to get into that. And if you noticed, even though we got up into the lower 90s, it was like for maybe 2 or 3 hours. We're not getting into that extreme heat and that overnight warm weather that we had with the drought and heat that we had back in July and early August.
I got a message on Facebook from David Z in Madison, who said the drought is patchy, as Rick is explaining. I remember that the end of the 1988 drought was due to another hurricane spawning off rain that moved up the Mississippi River Valley. It was around August 20th as well. So it's kind of a familiar pattern, I guess.
It is a familiar pattern and definitely something that we're seeing again. And the key is how we can link up what's happening with the tropics to the Midwest. And it looks like we're kind of halfway there.
All right. Well, that's Rick DeMaio. By the way, Mr. DeMaio, I'm not going to be here next week. It's going to be Beth Botts and Heather Fry and Denny Sheeter in the studio. So you be nice to those people.
Botts and Fry. It sounds like something I can order off the menu.
One from column A, one from column B. Go to DeMaioWeather.com or go to my website, MikeNovak.net, on the homepage, and I'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay, take care, Mike.
All right, stick around the second hour. Amy Stewart is on board. She is great.
Step right up. Everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you two can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before that name goes on. One tenth of a dollar. We got service after the sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring?
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Driving away today. Act now, and receive as our gift to you. They come in all colors.
See, that's kind of the show in a nutshell, because I'm giving away stuff today. You know, step right up.
Oh, nice.
Step right up.
Tom Waits,
step
right?
Step right up. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Heather is a big fan of Tom Waits, and I am too.
I like them. There's some songs where I'm just like, well, that man needs a cough lozenge or throat lozenge or whatever you call it.
One of my favorites is his version of Silent Night that he does. I'll play it Christmas occasionally. Silent Night. So, I should follow up because I kind of sprung that on you that next week it ain't me. It ain't me, babe.
Yeah.
No, it ain't me, babe.
That's crazy. So it's going to be so weird without you here. You're usually here
every
week.
Yeah, but you're in capable hands because, Beth, I don't know if you've actually ever met Beth, but, you know, she's been on the show for years and fills in often when I'm not here. And she's written for the Chicago Tribune for more than 20 years and was their garden writer and does a lot of freelance. She writes for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine and very national publications all over. She's a lot more ambitious than I am.
So are you going to be just like taking a rest or what are you going to be doing?
Who knows?
Take a rest, my friend. You are a busy, busy man.
That's part of it. It's just I need a day off.
Yeah, you do.
And so I talked to Ms. Fry, Heather Fry, and said, hey, how'd you like to sit in with Beth? And she said, cool. So the two of them will be here. And I get emails and tweets and Facebook posts all the time. They say, where's Heather? What's she up to? Well, you're going to hear from the lady herself next week, and I'm sure they'll have fun. That means you got to sit here. You got to sit in the big driver's seat.
I got it.
Because I know you do for Marshall and for some of the other shows.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Hal Sparks. And so you get right here at the control board. And
I'm excited.
It'll be fun. I think you feel like you're part of the team there, pal.
And, you know, you do need a break. Seriously.
Are you?
Seriously,
What are you trying to say there?
No, you do the TV show, you write this show, you always go to these events.
It's true. I do. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
I have to tell you. We're gonna give away some books. We're gonna give away some tickets with Amy Stewart, who's going to be on in just a second. While Dennis. I'm Michael. He's Dennis. While he scrambles to the other studio to get the call made. But while we're doing that, you know, we were talking with Rick DeMaio about the drought, and I'm going to get to this piece because before it becomes dated, and it's already a little bit dated, it was a piece that was Illinois Extension put out, a news release back. What's the date on this? It was before August 20th, it says, all right, it's originally published on August 13th and expired on August 20th, but, you know, that's only 6 days ago. And it's provided here for archival purposes, may contain dated information. They always put that disclaimer on, even if there's a tiny, you know, if the period's in the wrong place. They just want to make sure they get it right, and that's a great thing about Extension Services. Area residents have heard how bad the 2012 growing season has been, and they probably have a gut feeling that 2012 is about as bad as it gets. However, numbers always have a way of quantifying what is heard and what is felt. So how bad has 2012 been? The best way to understand the intensity of the 2012 drought is to look at the crop reports from the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, or NASS. They publish a crop progress report each Monday. The percentage of the soybean crop rated poor to very poor has increased 7 to 8% every 2 weeks for the last month. Now, this was as of August 13th. In early July, NASS rated 42% of the bean crop in Illinois as being poor to very poor. As of August 6th, NASS rated 57% of the bean crop as being poor to very poor. How does that compare to 2011? In 2011, about the same percentage of the bean crop was rated fair to good. The 2012 story is much worse when compared to 1988, and as we all know, that was a terrible drought year. In early August of 1988, only about a quarter of the bean crop was rated poor to very poor, a rating that held rather steady thereafter. And now we're at 57%, according. So there's more on this. And I go to the bottom. It says, pasture ratings provide the final set of staggering numbers that truly do quantify how disastrous 2012 has been for agricultural production. Over the past 2 months, when plotted on a graph, the percentage of pasture rated poor to very poor steadily increases, forming a 40 to 45 degree line. In other words, each week has brought roughly an 8 to 10% point decrease in pasture rating. In mid-June, 21% of Illinois pasture was rated poor to very poor. As of August 2012, 95% of Illinois pasture was rated as being in poor to very poor condition. All the noted ratings make a very important point. And this is, again, from the Extension Service article of August 13th. The 2012 growing season is, as everyone now agrees, worse than 1988 from a production standpoint. When more seasoned, and they have that in quotes, more seasoned growers tell us that this season reminds them of 1936, despite the lack of records, they are probably right. Illinois is seeing a growing season, the likes of which it has not seen for more than 75 years. So, that article, I'll tell you what, I need to get that. I'm going to post that when I have a second here on Twitter and Facebook so you can read the article for yourself. It really is revealing. And I believe I got that from, as always, Ron Wolford, Cook County Extension. I think he published it last week or the week before, and I picked up on it. And it's pretty amazing stuff, but it doesn't hurt to republish that. So when I have a spare second here, I will pop that online so people can see it. We got a question on line one there too, Denny, before we get to Amy. I suppose I can just look at
Fran, Oak Lawn.
Fran in Oak. Let's quickly, before we go to Amy, let's go to Fran in Oak Lawn. Fran, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Mike, good morning. I have two questions. I'll give you the easy one first.
Okay, great.
And the happy one. Gardening experts are always telling us not to water, you know, during the day, and especially not toward evening.
Okay.
Because of the potential spread of fungal diseases.
Yep.
Why aren't fungal diseases rampant when it rains at night?
I think that's a really good point. And I think sometimes they are. It's interesting.
I've never seen it. I've never seen it. I've been gardening for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Never seen it.
Well, it's funny because I got a tweet here this morning from Snappy J Dog who says, powdery mildew at the mini farm, help!
Yeah.
And it's interesting you should say that because I got a report this week, a plant health care report from the Morton Arboretum, and they're reporting downy mildew on impatiens.
Certain species.
And this year, because it was so dry, we didn't see a lot of that during the summer. I got to tell you, I have not seen a lot of powdery mildew. I've seen a little bit in my area, but now that we're getting more rains and cooler temperatures at night, you're going to start to see those diseases pop up. Morton Arboretum says now that the weather is starting to change, we're seeing conditions that are favorable to this disease, wet foliage, cooler temperatures, and moist air. The disease is also promoted by poor air circulation and heavy shade. So these are the kinds of things that will happen. So I think you do see it. But I think the reason it's not the same is probably because it doesn't rain every night, whereas a lot of people might water their plants every night. And that way you're just promoting those conditions that create the powdery mildew and other diseases. What was it? Right. So was that the easy question?
Number two.
Okay.
Number two. Chicago Wilderness Magazine was the best magazine of its type I've ever subscribed to. I want to know, number one, if it's true that it went out of production because of conflict in philosophy on a new staff members who came in, whatever. And number two, why can't they get the darn thing started up again? Just get rid of the dead wood, if that was the case, or the troublemakers. Take them out and shoot them. It was the best magazine of its type I've ever seen.
I got to tell you, I agree with you. Chicago Wilderness Magazine was wonderful. It was just, and it is missed. It is sorely missed in the Chicago area. I don't know why it folded. I suspect it was just financial. Magazines are really, really hard to keep going. It's in the age of the internet and video and Twitter and Facebook. It's hard to get people to pay for paper and, you know, glossy paper. And I suspect, because I don't know the inside scoop on that. It's something that I've never investigated, because I assumed it was just financial. And I can talk to some of my friends, and if it was political, I probably, you know, if it was political, I probably won't talk about it on the air anyway. You know, I might let you know. But the idea, you know, I just think it's, in this day and age, boy, keeping any magazine, especially a niche magazine like that, on the air for people who are interested in wilderness, Chicago wilderness, and you know, in natural areas. There's a lot of great magazines out there, and I bet the competition is fierce. So that would be my guess on that. By the way, I got to let you know, while we were sitting here, I got tweeted by Jennifer Brennan, my partner on Dig In Chicago. And she disputes what you have to say. She says those diseases are rampant when there is rain at night. Powder on, she says, I guess she's got powdery mildew on her own cucumbers due to cool nights and more condensation. She says she diagnoses it all the time at a chalet. So there, when it rains at night, yeah, it does happen too. So there's the answer to your question from Jennifer Brennan.
She's seen it and I'm not. Maybe it's because I work mostly with natives.
Well, that might have something to do with it, yeah. Although I bet natives get some powdery mildew too, don't they?
The mints.
Yeah, that's you know, because that's. I was thinking Monarda. You know, gets it all the time.
A mint.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling, as always, and thanks for playing Stump the Mic.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye bye. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number, and that's the number that Amy Stewart, author and horticulturist and ranter, garden ranter. You know, Amy, good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Always. Always a pleasure. I went to your website and saw that you even have links to my podcast, one of my podcasts of our, one of our interviews. It was when you were actually in studio.
It's one of my best interviews ever. I have to feature it prominently on my website.
Yeah.
Highlight.
Don't suck up.
Highlight.
Don't suck up. It's just so unbecoming. It really is. You just diminish yourself and your own products when you do that. And your brand, you know? I know. Yeah, I have to call you on it. But as I said, if you people are not familiar with Amy Stewart, she's written some fabulous books. And now I see you're making a living off of the last couple of them. People love those talks, I assume, because you talk about wicked plants and wicked bugs. That's your industry now, the wicked industry. In fact,
yes.
And you're wicked too, so you're part of it. The two books I'm referring to are Wicked Bugs, the Louse That Conquered Napoleon's Army and Other Diabolical Insects, and Wicked Plants, the Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities. And coming up in September, on September 7th and 8th, 7th, you're going to be in Normal, Illinois, at Illinois State. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's like a whole day of stuff down there.
And this is I've never been to the Illinois Horticultural Center. I'm very excited about this.
And they are too, obviously, because they've set up a whole raft of things. All, you know, you got to talk in the morning, and then you got to like a tea in the afternoon, and then a talk in the evening.
And a soiree. There's actually going to be a soiree.
Are you going to wear one of those, you know, prom gowns?
I'm not divulging any details about what I'm wearing ahead of time.
I got to tell you, I see on TV, you sometimes see women who are trying to look good and they wear something that looks like a prom gown. And you just think, oh, man, you need somebody to dress you in the morning, too. Mm-hmm. It's just, but that's another story. I could go into that.
Yeah.
What we're going to do, one of the things we're going to do here this morning is give away a couple of tickets. Because on the 8th, you're going to be at Fernwood Botanical Garden and Nature Preserve in Niles, Illinois. I guess sometimes they call it Buchanan, but it's basically the same place.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't know. You're from California.
You know, you know the difference more than I do. But yeah, that's on Saturday the 8th at Fernwood Botanical Garden.
Right. So, yeah. so the way it works is Friday is the all-day event at Normal, Illinois. Right. And I hope folks get down there. I've got the links all on my website. You can see how to get involved. And there, like, Amy said, there's a lecture in the morning. There's a, there's a soiree in the evening.
Yes,
and she promises to wear a prom dress. And,
right.
And then the next day it's off to, Niles, Michigan. And now here's the cool thing about your presentation. Apparently what I love about this, You're going to do a talk that I guess originally was meant for mystery writers.
That's right. Murder mysteries.
Murder mysteries. And
yes.
I know all about this because Kathleen reads a lot of murder mysteries.
Oh, okay.
And or used to. I'm not sure she does so much anymore. But that's the great thing about murder mysteries is there's two givens. They're always using some botanical extract to kill somebody. And apparently the other thing is that the gardener is always cranky in murder mysteries.
Ah, okay.
That's what Kathleen says.
If they're garden themed murder mysteries.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Or if they're, you know, they take place in a mansion, because don't a lot of murder mysteries take place in mansions too?
I think it's good if they do, yes.
Yeah.
Well yeah. So what happened is that a couple of years ago I started getting requests to give talk to groups of murder mystery writers about how to kill their characters with wicked plants or, you know, poisonous plants or venomous insects. And so this has become a little thing that I do. I go around and talk to murder mystery writers. You don't have to be a murder mystery writer to come, but you will get lots of helpful tips about how to create the perfect crime and get away with it.
I know, and if you don't like your spouse very much, I'm urging you to go to this event.
Take notes.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm telling you, Amy, this is... You don't have to do anything for the rest of your life. You don't have to write any more books. You don't have to do. You don't have to do Garden Rant anymore. And by the way, Amy is one of the contributors to Garden Rant. And if you've never been to Garden Rant, you need to go to Garden Rant because they rant about gardening.
Yes, we do.
This is something that will carry you for the rest of your life.
Because everybody needs to know how to commit the perfect murder. We all need that information.
Exactly.
Yes. Right.
Exactly. So let's do one of those right now. I want to give away the tickets.
Okay.
To Fernwood Botanical Garden in Niles/Buchanan, Michigan. I believe one of them's the mailing address and the other's a physical address, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty certain of that. Now, do you have what are you going to do? Give us some clues about, and is this a plant or a bug?
I'll give you a clue about a plant.
Okay.
Okay. And so whoever guesses the plant gets the tickets. Is that what we're doing here?
Exactly. Now.
All right.
Now, before we do this.
Okay.
I want to tell people that do this only if you think you're going to get over to Niles, Michigan on the 8th. Because I'm also going to give away some books. And we'll do this with books, and that's a lot easier for you to get your hands on here. But
right.
But
right.
I don't want to give away the tickets to somebody who doesn't want them and who's just trying to show how smart they are. All right? So give us the clue.
Okay.
And you're going to start with one clue, and if nobody gets it, we'll add some more. Is that the idea?
Okay, yeah. Let's do it that way.
Okay.
So it's a tropical tree. And its seeds are, of course, poisonous, because we're talking about poison here. It's if you ingest the seeds, you get an unstoppable flood of pain signals through your nervous system.
Ooh.
So it's one of the most painful poisons you can ingest.
I've had a couple of burgers like that. but that's why you got to be careful where you have a burger.
Right.
So now
those
here's
Chicago hot dogs.
Yeah. No, Chicago-style dogs don't do that. No, 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 no.
They don't do that.
No, not Chicago-style dogs. And I'll tell you what, if you don't want to call, if you want to tweet the answer, that works for me. If you want to put it on Facebook, that works for me. I know I got to do this. So here's what I'm going to do, because you got to talk to Dennis because we didn't coordinate this and he doesn't know the answer right now, right?
Oh, that's a good point. Well, maybe he does and he can win the ticket.
Dennis, do you have any clue what this plant is?
No, not at all.
Okay. See, there we go.
Ficus.
Because I talked about those earlier on the show. So, good guess, Dennis. But I'm sorry. Wrong. Y'all, try calling back. We'll take the 47th caller at 773-763-9278. Actually, we'll take the first caller. Describe the plant again, Amy.
It's a tropical tree, and the seeds are poisonous, and they send an unstoppable flood of pain signals through your nervous system.
Yikes. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
And you're going to talk to Dennis because I'm going to take care of some business, and we will be back with author Amy Stewart, who can tell you how to kill anybody with a plant or a bug. All you need to do is ask her about it or show up at Fernwood Botanical Garden on the 8th of September, or in Normal, Illinois State University on the 7th. So hang on, Amy. Dennis, you talk to Dennis. And if you've got a couple of those other questions, give him the answers to those, too, so that we are prepared for this. All right. We'll be back to Amy Stewart in just a second on The Mike Novak Show.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Again, the number is 773-763-9278. We got a couple of calls coming in. Be patient if you're dialing in or if you're waiting for Dennis to get it. He's jumping from studio to studio right now. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. We've talked a lot about watering this year, but we're going to continue to do that into the fall. Some of us have gotten rain. Some of us haven't. Regardless of that, our trees have been stressed over the past few years by various conditions, including drought and flooding. There's a double dip for you. This year, it's drought. So pay attention to soil moisture as we head into fall, especially for your evergreens, which can lose water through their needles, even in the depths of winter. When you water, use a drip hose for young trees and a sprinkler at the drip line for mature trees. Water deeply and infrequently, and continue to water until the ground freezes. In addition, mulching and other soil care activities can help create the optimal growing condition for your trees. Practices that promote root development then will go a long way to protecting the long-term health of your trees. And this is important as we head into fall because there's a lot of tree root growth in the fall, which will help your tree over winter. And of course, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4247. You guys know this number. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
are going great, and they're only getting better.
Yeah, and this is what they sing just before they get poisoned by Amy Stewart. And she is on the line, author extraordinaire, coming to the Chicago area on the 7th and 8th of September. Those books must be doing pretty well, Amy.
Well, I suppose they are. They're still out there in the world. There is a lot of stuff happening, actually. There's this exhibit, the North Carolina Arboretum has built this whole, like, spooky, haunted sort of house exhibit about wicked plants where you walk through the house and there's, like, people who have murdered someone with a plant, or you can open the drawers and open the books. It's this big exhibit that's going to be traveling around and going to museums all over the country.
Are you getting a cut of this?
No, actually, no.
Why not?
You know, museums are struggling. These are nonprofit institutions. This is not a big money-making. I mean, I'm sure they'll sell my books in the gift shop, and I'll be very happy about that. But no, that's all I get is a little shelf on the gift shop.
Hey, you know, Amy, we're all struggling. All right?
We are.
Question. Give us the description again. I guess, you know, part of the problem I think right now is that the folks who would answer this question are Dennis. Let me ask you a question. When you were told the answer, did it make sense to you?
When I learned how to spell it, yes.
There's another clue.
Yeah, difficult to spell.
There's another clue. Okay, and give us a description again, Amy.
Okay, well, it's a tropical tree. The seeds cause an unstoppable flood of pain signals. And would you like to know who has used it as a murder weapon?
Yes, this is the additional clue. And here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to give you your choice. A book or the tickets?
A book
just
or
to open
tickets.
It, because I got a feeling not enough people feel they can make it on that day. So
right, and know the clue. So either the tickets or a book. It's this tropical tree. The seeds send an unstoppable flood of pain signals through the nervous system, and it was used as a murder weapon by Dr. Thomas Neal Cream to murder his patients.
Oh.
Yes.
It's not fair when a doctor does it.
I know. He prescribed it to his patients. It was their last prescription, you could say.
Wow. 773-763-9278. If you know the answer to that, and maybe it's just too tough. Was that one of the easy ones?
Well, I thought it was an easy one.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, but you've been writing about this for years now.
It's true. People don't really know about a lot of these poisons, so that is definitely the
Well,
case.
let's go through some and not give away, but let's talk a little bit about, for instance, what's the plant that killed Lincoln's mother?
Okay, so the weed that killed Lincoln's mother, this is white snake root. And what happened is that people, you know, we're talking back in the early 1800s and before, you know, you'd have livestock and they'd pretty much graze on whatever they could find. And so cows were eating this plant and getting very sick. The poison would end up in their milk and people would drink the milk and get sick and die. And that was called milk sickness. And that is what killed Lincoln's mother, Nancy Hanks Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Died of milk sickness.
Milk sickness.
Yeah.
Don't see a whole lot of that anymore.
You don't see a lot of it anymore. You know, it really took a surprisingly long time to figure out what was causing it and to get the word out all over the country. You know, this is where actually the USDA is sort of the unsung hero in this story, because you know those farmers bulletins?
Yeah.
It's enough. That's how word got out about stuff like this. Is that the USDA would issue a farmer's bulletin and get it out to farmers all over the country. Otherwise, there was no internet. There was no real sophisticated communication system. They had actually figured it out kind of in the Chicago area, actually. People knew what was going on. But in Atlanta, 20 years later, people were still dying of milk sickness, and they had no idea what caused it. News just did not get around.
All right. I saw Denny's answering a couple of phones there.
All right.
They were obviously the wrong answer.
Wrong answers.
Well, put them on.
Oh, you want me to?
Oh, yeah. That's...
You want the wrong answer? Okay. Well, what do I say?
We got to put the wrong answers on, too, so people know. I mean, how, you know?
Okay, you're wrong. Let's put you on a hold. And,
so what were
it.
The two guesses? So tell me the two guesses.
One of the guesses was the castor tree.
I see. I think that's a pretty good guess.
And the other one, It slipped my mind. It was some long name tree.
A long name tree.
That could easily be spelled.
All right. Well, let's give a second one then. We'll throw out the second one. You can answer either one. Give me another one, Amy.
Okay. What is the plant that has killed more people than any other plant?
Ooh.
The plant responsible for the most deaths cumulatively throughout history around the world.
I want another hint here.
That's not enough?
No, it's not. Well, I suppose people who are on Google will get it immediately. Oops.
Maybe not. I don't know.
I think give us a little an extra hint there.
Let's see. An extra hint. It grows in the South.
Okay. So we don't have to worry about killing anybody in Illinois.
The southern United States.
Or at least northern Illinois.
Grown. Yes.
Okay. The plant that is responsible for more deaths than any other plant in history.
In history, around the world.
773-763-9278. Or you can answer the first one, the tree, a berry?
The tree whose seeds send unstoppable pain through people's bodies and was used as a murder weapon by Dr. Thomas Neal Cream to kill his patients. So we now have two. And you can get either the books or the tickets. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, exactly. I like it. I'll just let you do this. You just sort of 773-763-9278. I just got a tweet from my partner in crime. Since I last saw you, I started a television show here in the Chicago area.
Yes.
Yeah, Dig in Chicago. And Jennifer Brennan is my co-host. And she just tweeted to me. You were talking about the plant that killed Lincoln's mother. Milk disease? Is that what they called it?
Milk sickness.
Milk sickness. She said, "That's what happened to milkweed. Asclepias got banned to grow or have on your property because of this problem." So I guess it must have been a misunderstanding.
It could have been a misunderstanding. It could be that milkweed is also toxic to cattle. A lot of plants are toxic to livestock. So this has been a big problem for ranchers and farmers.
And I suppose as we get away from area, as we become more urban rather than rural, that those bans have less and less importance.
That's right. Yeah. And more of our livestock, they're living on feedlots and they just don't get to wander around and eat whatever they want. So,
So I see we've got some guesses there, and Denny's working now. For some reason, the phones just went whoa.
Wow. Okay.
And they went nuts. We're at a slight disadvantage here because he has to kind of run from studio to studio. Don't ask me why. It's we're phone issues here that we're trying to clear up, but. So it's funny watching him run around there. So tell me, what's the next on the agenda for you in terms of books? You're always working on something.
Oh, I have a new book coming out in March, so it is done and being designed and all that stuff. It's called The Drunken Botanist: The Plants That Create the World's Great Drinks.
Wow, it's kind of in the same line. Yes, Dennis.
We got Kurt on line one who wants to ask a question. I'm going to take these other calls.
Okay, great. Okay. Good, let's do that. Let's go to line one. And Kurt, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Yeah, how are you doing?
All right.
I thought I was answering your question.
Oh, if you're
answering the question, sorry.
That's okay, answering the question. Right. What's the
deadliest plant?
Yes.
Tobacco?
Did you hear that, Amy? Amy? Oh, no. We lost Amy. That's not good. All right. Hold on. I'll tell you what. I'm going to put you on hold. I think you might be right. I think you might be right. Hang on just a second, and we will take care of this issue. All right. Phone heaven. Here we are. Okay. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We will be back with Amy and get an answer to this Just hang on a second.
Hot, dry summers are hard on our lawns and landscapes. Use Milorganite fertilizer to help your lawn and landscape survive the stressful summer season. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. The organic nitrogen in Milorganite is slow release and non-burning, even during drought. The fertilizer will be in place and ready to work when better growing conditions and moisture return, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% iron promotes deep green growth. Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
D. Landreth Seed Company is once again offering their fabulous heirloom seeds. And I told you last hour that you could get the crocus bulbs. Well, right now the focus is on late summer bulbs, and this one in particular is the water lily crocus. Unlike the wild saffron crocus that we talked about last hour, the water lily crocus has no culinary value. It is purely an ornamental, but what an ornamental it is. I grow this in my own yard, and it's like a surprise party in September when the gorgeous deep pink blooms pop up in the fall garden when everything else is spent or dying. The blossoms themselves are large. They're 3+ inches tall and 3 to 4 inches wide, but very low to the ground, no more than 6 inches high. 2 or 3 in an area is enough for them to have a presence. They will naturalize, approximately doubling each year, and they are hardy from zone 4 to zone 10. These bulbs need to be planted by early September, which means you need to order now. And, you know, Barb Malera from D. Landreth was talking last week about how you can just, you know, you just put them on a windowsill. You don't even have to put them on the ground, and these things will sprout, believe it or not. And then you put them in your garden where they get recharged, and they will come back year after year. Log on to LandrethSeeds.com, find them on Facebook, or call 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784, and tell them Mike sent you.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Okay. We've got some answers here, and we got Amy back. Sorry about that, Amy. You with
me? That's all right. I'm back.
Okay.
I'm here.
And do we still have our caller in line one with the Denny? What do you think?
You know, those last few minutes were pretty hectic. Let's go to line five. I'm pretty sure they want to try and answer.
Well, let me try line one just to make sure we didn't.
There you go. Hey, I'm here.
You are still here. Good. All right. This was the answer to the question. The plant that has killed more people in the history of the world than any other. And I've forgotten your name, caller on line one.
Kurt.
Thank you, Kurt. What's your answer?
I think it's the tobacco plant.
Oh, very good.
Is that it?
That's it. Of course.
All right.
Tobacco.
Wait.
90 million people.
Good, yep. Kurt. All right. That's great. That's a great answer, too, and it's a good question. You want a book, Kurt?
Excellent. That would be great.
Okay, I'll send you a copy of Wicked Plants. How's that?
Excellent. That's awesome.
I'm gonna put you on hold, and you talk to Dennis. He will get all of your information. Get his phone number as well, and we will send it off to you as soon as we can, all right?
Excellent. Great show. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate you calling. All right. All right. Bye-bye. Whoops. I got to hold on. There we go. And then we put them on hold. There we go. Let's take another answer. Let's go to line four. Who have we got on line four here? Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Yes. You're on the air.
I don't have an answer. I have an answer for you.
What? Okay.
Well, the lady talked about livestock. Two things I'd like to bring up. One is the fact that we raise dairy goats. We got a couple acres out in the country across the state line here.
Yeah.
And milkweed is poisonous to goats.
Is it?
So she is correct, because we always had to make sure that the animals did not somehow, you know, because they grow naturally, the pods give their seeds off. And so we always had to keep it clear, because it would be poisonous to a goat. And secondly, just an interesting point, I have a new puppy, and my vet reminded me that I have ewes in my front yard, which are poisonous both to goats and to puppies. And I think it'd be a great topic for her to work on sometime, is the noxious things that are outside to livestock and to small pets, because, you know, homeowners even in the city plant things, not being aware of the toxic nature to their animals.
Yes, absolutely. And I did include a chapter in Wicked Plants about plants that are toxic to animals, but there are certainly a lot more of them than I could possibly include. And, you know, actually, the ASPCA has an Animal Poison Control Center, and they've done a really good job with this. So if you ever suspect that an animal's been poisoned, of course, get them to the vet, but check with the ASPCA. Just go online and search for their Animal Poison Control Center. Really good resource.
That's great, except out in the country, we have dial-up, so most of us out in the country don't even use the Internet.
Oh, well, you know, and that's interesting, too. I mean, you bring up a couple of points, which is that you never know what plant is going to affect what animal and who's, you know, and at the same time, we're told to restore prairies. To add native plants to our landscapes, we should be using milkweed. So you have to sort of balance the two.
And, yeah, exactly.
Because milkweed is a wonderful plant, but I had no idea that it was toxic to goats. So you've given me some good information. I really appreciate that.
That's what I thought I'd share with you. And, you know, I don't know. It could be toxic to other livestock, too. I just know particular goats.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so
thank
much
you.
For calling. You have a good
You're
Sunday.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 773-763-9278. Okay, I'm going to have to let you go, Amy, but we gave away a book, but I also got an answer on Twitter.
Okay.
For question number one, whoever tweeted said cotton for the second question, so that's wrong, obviously. But Calabar bean.
Oh, well, Calabar bean's an interesting one, but it's not the answer. Should we give the answer?
I think so. I think we have to give the answer here.
It's time to give the answer, and the answer is strychnine.
Oh.
Strychnine. Everyone's heard of strychnine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a medicine, too, isn't it?
Strychnine? Well, you've heard of it as a homeopathic treatment, Strychnos nux vomica. But, yeah, nobody out there, please don't ever take strychnine as a medicine.
No, I think I was thinking of quinine.
Oh, quinine. You know, quinine will be in the new book. It'll be in The Drunken Botanist, because it's used in tonic water. So you get quinine in your gin and tonic.
Great.
That's a conversation for another day.
Well, it is. Well, when The Drunken Botanist comes out, I want you on the show. I hope you make a trip to Chicago.
I'm planning on making a trip to Chicago. So, yeah, that'll happen. And you'll find somebody to give those tickets to, somebody who wants to come out to Niles.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What I will do is ask my listeners to write me if you think you're going to be there. I got a couple of tickets that are in my hot little hands. And let me take one more call here, okay, on line one. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning. Hello.
Oh, hey, this is Max Muller, Environment Illinois.
Oh, wonderful. I'm glad you're there, Max. Okay, we're getting to Max in just a second. So hang on, Max. I will be right with you. Amy, I'm going to let you go. When you're in town next spring with the new book, and give me the name of it again.
It's called The Drunken Botanist.
All right, and we'll add it to the list. If folks want to go see you speak and talk about how to kill people in a convenient... Not sometimes messy and sometimes not so messy way.
Right.
Go to Fernwood Botanical Gardens on the 8th of September or to Illinois State University in Normal on the 7th. And I hope you have a ton of people, and I think you will. And you're always fun to have on the show. And good luck with the next book, too.
All right. Thanks. Great talking to you, Mike.
All right. Have a great Sunday.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Are you ready for fall? Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center certainly is. They have a lot to show you at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village neighborhood, including new fall heuchera varieties, ornamental cabbages, kales and peppers, mums, hardy asters, amazing millet, croton, Ajuga, Creeping Jenny, Purple Fountain Grass, Pansies, Dusty Miller, Petunias, Lantana, Sweet Potato Vine, etc., etc., etc. Plus, they have a beautiful selection of dried accents for fall. It's all good. I just went to their Facebook page and found out that on Friday, they received a fabulous shipment of perennial grasses just in time for late summer planting. In addition to this adorable miniature fountain grass, a.k.a. Little Bunny, they have the towering Rockin' Panicum Virgatum, a.k.a. Heavy Metal, the graceful, lilting, blonde ambition, Blue Grandma, and many more. This is urban gardening at its best. You should like Christy Weber Farm and Garden Center on Facebook to receive special offers and the latest news, or go to ChristyWeber.com and click on Garden Center, or just stop by at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian village. Look for the explosion of color. Yeah, I played it before. That's okay. Let's go back to line one. Let's bring in Max Muller from Environment Illinois. Max, it's good to have you here on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, no problem. It's great to be here.
And it's a good news day for environmentalists in the state of Illinois.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. This morning, very early, the governor, Governor Pat Quinn, announced that he was vetoing Senate Bill 3442. This is the Plastic Bag and Film Recycling Act, or I should say the so-called Plastic Bag and Film Recycling Act, because had it passed, it wouldn't actually have recycled very many bags or plastic, but it would have locked Illinois into really high plastic bag use by blocking city-level efforts to cut back on bag use. It was a really bad bill, and we are thrilled that he vetoed it.
Yeah, it was opposed by the Illinois Municipal League and 150 municipalities. I remember we had a little press event down at the Thompson Center the other month about this, and one of the people there was the mayor of Champaign, who Don Gerard, who was a great guy. I really enjoyed meeting him. And he said, if the city of Champaign and other towns want to put a fee on plastic bags or ban them or do nothing, it should be our choice. I hope they don't do nothing, but it sounds like they were planning to do something a little stronger. And your point is well taken, Max, that this was, I had somebody write to me and say it was a plastic bag manufacturer's wet dream, basically. And it kind of was, because as you and I both know, we've seen all the studies across the country that say that plastic bag recycling programs don't work. They just don't.
You know. Yeah, the reason I think that the things that we've seen, the reason you're saying that is that, you know, nationally, for the last 50 years of plastic bag use, the rate of bag use has climbed ever higher. We use billions of bags a year, and the national average recycling rate for plastic bags is still less than 10%. It hasn't climbed in the same way, and if we want to reduce the problem of plastic bag litter and waste, we really have to both increase recycling and reduce the use of plastic bags. And the city of Champaign is determined to go forward with a plastic bag ban. The city looked at its litter problem. They spent taxpayer dollars going up and cleaning plastic bags out of storm drains, and farmers complain about bags blowing from the city and into the nearby their fields and getting caught in farm equipment. The city has to go clean that up, and it's a source of ill will. And so they ruled out recycling because it wasn't cutting it, and they've decided to do a plastic bag ban if they're not preempted by this bill. The governor's vetoed it, so we're a lot closer to them not being preempted. And if they go ahead and ban plastic bags, that'll actually cut litter and waste from plastic bags statewide five times more than this bill would have done. This bill was really a do-nothing bill for the plastics industry, and it was their effort to block local efforts to reduce plastic bag use and preserve their market for billions and billions of plastic bags. They're looking at cities in California where over 50 cities and counties have banned plastic bags, and they were saying to themselves, how can we stop that from happening in Illinois? And this bill, which was
a ban on local efforts to reduce plastic bag waste dolled up as a statewide recycling bill was their solution. It almost passed, and the governor saved the day by vetoing it, and we are grateful. And now we need to work to make sure that legislators know they should vote to uphold that veto this fall.
Yeah, that's actually the point I was going to make next, is that the work's not over. Just because the governor vetoed the bill doesn't mean it's going to go away. From what I understand, there was a veto-proof majority that voted for this, but the vote will have to come up again. And now, I assume, is the time that people like us put pressure on our state legislators to say, no, this is not good law, this is not good policy, do not vote for this again.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the governor's statement, his statement of explanation of why he was vetoing the bill is very good. Is a very good, clear explanation of what's wrong with this bill. Its goals are just for recycling are so meager it doesn't require the bag industry to do anything, while blocking all these great city level initiatives. And I think that what we need to do with legislators is really educate them about that. The bill passed out of the Senate at 1 a.m., the last day of the session. I'm not even sure the state senators knew what it was. And so people can help a lot by calling their state senators and telling them that this is a bad bill. This is a plastics industry bill to maintain high use of plastic bags in Illinois without really any significant increase in recycling. It needs to be stopped. And just helping to educate their senators is the thing that people can do if they want to help. That would be great.
Well, and really this won't happen, I assume, any further action on it, excuse me, until the fall veto session, right?
Yeah, November. That's right. Right after the election in November, the legislature will reconvene to consider whether to override or sustain gubernatorial vetoes.
Right. So this is where you and I come in. And where the organizations that I mentioned earlier in the show who were behind this bill come in, we have to, because what will happen now is that this will all die down and it'll get real quiet, and then they'll talk about pension reform and everything else. And it could happen again. It could sneak through at the last second again in the veto session. So when we get to that point, you and I have to make people aware that that this is going to happen, and get them to call their senators, call their representatives, and say, don't pass this bill again because it's bad policy. So what are you doing today up at Grays Lake?
Well, that's exactly right. We do have a lot of work to do still. And today in Grays Lake, Abby Goldberg is the author, of 13-year-old author, of an online petition that got 175,000 signatures, or 173,000 as of today, urging the governor to veto the bill. And since his announcement came out this morning, Abby is going to her school, which is Prairie Crossing Charter School in Grays Lake, and she's just going to do a quick press conference at 1:30 today to thank the governor on behalf of herself and the hundreds of thousands of people who signed our petition for vetoing the bill. So that's going to be a good event. And and then I think we're going to need to keep up the work and getting the word out about this through November, like you said.
Yeah. So we know what our job is, and folks who are listening today, remember, around November, we're going to have to talk about this again. And earlier in the day, somebody wrote, so why can't we get a bottle bill in Illinois? And you and I both know, Max, that's a whole nother ball of wax, isn't it?
It sure is. Yeah, it sure is.
And we're going to
we can work on that next.
Yeah, I think so. I you know, with Governor Quinn in office, I think this is something might actually have a chance. It depends on the pressure of the lobbyists and whether our legislators are willing to stand up to that pressure and do the right thing. Max Mueller,
thing is that Governor Quinn was willing to stand up to that pressure, and I think that we really do owe thanks to the governor for vetoing the bill.
Oh, I just, yeah. And you're right. That's a really good point to make. He vetoed that bill. He vetoed the Leucadia bill. He did stand up to the corporate interest in this regard. And so, I say, kudos to the governor.
Yeah. That's right.
Max Mueller, Environment Illinois. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. People want to go to your website. It is
environmentillinois.org.
That's all you need to know. EnvironmentIllinois.org. We will talk again very soon. Give my best to Amy up in Grays Lake.
Will do. Yeah, Abby Goldberg. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Abby. I just had Amy Stewart on. Abby Goldberg. Sorry. Thank you. Talk to you later.
Will do.
Bye-bye. That's about it. I'm going to remind folks. Dennis, by the way, yeoman's work today.
What's that?
Yeoman's work. I'm sure you lost a few pounds running around back and forth between the studios.
Needed it.
so maybe I'll do that next. No, next week I'm not here. Just letting you know, Dennis is here. Beth Botts is here. Heather Fry will be here. They're going to handle the take a week off. Well needed break.
Well needed.
And
giving
me, he's giving me the thumbs up, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I really do. So be nice to them. Call in and make their job a lot easier, and I will see you in a couple of weeks. Go green or go home.